Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
HQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, intruder alert. GQ 3, intruder alert.
Madam Perry?
Jeffrey, can you hear me?
Just barely. Can you hear me?
Okay. Better?
All right. Better?
Okay. Better. All right.
Okay. All right.
Welcome.
Oh, boy.
And so, would you describe the Wolfpack authors doing?
Sorry, you're coming in. I'm getting a little bit of static. I'm actually coming to you from an undisclosed location in Detroit. I'm working right now. But if you can hear me all right, I will just go ahead and start.
Yes, can you hear me better now?
Yes, can you hear me better now?
Yes, yes, very, very much.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
All right, we are the Wolfpack Authors, an intersectional group of authors from all genres, all walks of life, and from all around the globe. We met on Twitter. It started as kind of a running joke between myself and another author based on a Hangover movie reference, and it just kind of spiraled from there. And what I hoped would turn into a marketing group for marketing all of our different books. Quickly grew into friendship. And with that, you know, I became the leader of the Wolfpack Authors. And my mantra with that is just do good things for people and it will be returned to you. So to that end, we've gone ahead and written an anthology that is the proceeds of which are going to charity.
Fantastic.
And subject to that, I defer to any further questions.
And so, now, the name
say
of
again?
The name of the anthology?
Oh, it is Once Upon a Wolfpack, a Wolfpack Authors anthology.
All right. And who came up with the
idea
of the anthology? Is that you?
Oh, no. Actually, it was... It was a conversation between one of our authors, Joe Congle, and Z. Gottlieb, and I was brought into an email conversation about this idea, and we just kind of ran with it. We brought it up to the group, and everyone said, "Wow, that sounds like a great idea. Let's do it." I can say that I didn't know that it was going to be quite this amount of work when I started, but I am incredibly thankful to have had the opportunity to do it because I have learned so much about publishing and marketing and putting together an anthology as a result of reading or of working on this project.
Let me ask you this, Jeff.
Let me ask you this, Jeff.
I know one thing,
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I'm mostly on Twitter, and I'll tell you, I caught part of that question, just because I don't know if it's just the area I'm in right now, absolutely. Like Twitter kind of is the place to be for authors. So I don't know if you can reframe that question because I'm still getting static.
Thank you for what I teach to people when I teach to class. And I tell them, Twitter is a place to influence.
authors on Once Upon a Wolf Pack. Everyone seems to have a degree, a pretty interesting body of work.
Hi, you still with me?
And so, how long have you been writing, Jeffrey?
Oh, goodness, since I've been about 9 years old. You know, I started writing bad poetry. I took you off speaker because I think that was the problem. Sorry about that. Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, I can hear you perfectly.
Oh, okay, good, because you were breaking up there pretty bad. I had to move my location. Sorry.
Okay, can you hear me now? Okay.
Now? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, better? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, much better.
We're good.
Okay. So,
all right, sorry, go on.
That's okay. So, you've been writing since you were about nine, started bad poetry. I've heard that from a lot of good authors, is how they started writing bad poetry, and I'm sure it wasn't that bad. And so a couple
sadly, some of it did get submitted and accepted in places, and you know, from there I just kind of stopped and life went on.
Yeah. Well, you've got a few of the authors. How many authors are actually in this anthology?
In the anthology, we have 16 contributors, and then plus I wrote a foreword and the owner of the nonprofit that we're donating to, Lockwood Animal Rescue Center, wrote a foreword for us as well. So technically we've got 17 contributors, 16 of which are part of the Wolfpack authors. And then in the entire group, we have close to 40 authors that, you know, we're on Twitter, marketing for one another, creating graphics, things like that.
Well, right here, we also have here in the genie bottle with us here at Madame Perry Salon, we have Z Gottlieb and Luna Sellis. And I'm going
oh,
to
good.
In and say hello. Z? Z Gottlieb? Luna?
I'm here.
Hey, Luna. Good to meet you.
It's great to meet you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm Madame Perry, and I am so glad. It looks like I barely missed you because I just moved away from Asheville 2 months ago.
Oh, dang. Why would you do that? It is a great place. I love it.
I've been there 10 years.
Where did you move to, man?
I don't know. Well, I don't know how we missed each other.
Oh, dang.
The same place we were at. And also, let me see. Let me bring in another one of your cohorts, and let's see.
Okay.
Zeke Gottlieb.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. I'm pleased to be here. Thank you for, you know, representing our organization and bringing, you know, letting people know about the book.
Well, I'm absolutely thrilled. You've got just pretty much everything I like: books, reading, wolf, something that benefits the veterans. These are all the things that these are things that are very, very important to me, very precious. So I know that some of you, maybe all of you, are going to read from your work from Once Upon a Wolf tonight. And let me see. Oh, wait a minute. You know what? Z, would you do me a favor?
Sure.
Since we're here in the virtual genie bottle, would you reach over and part the beaded curtain? Because I think Stanley Brown is coming in. Or maybe Stefan. Hi, welcome, Madame Perry.
And I am here.
And this is, it's kind of dark in here. I can't tell. Are you Stanley?
Right, I am. I am. I'm here.
All right, great. Good. The whole pack. And
I will say, this is Jeff, I'm absolutely tickled pink because I've talked to a handful of members on the phone, but mostly our communication is limited to group chat, emails. So for a few, this is the first time I'm hearing their voice.
Same here.
Yeah, same here.
Same for me.
Nice to talk to
you. I
want to
say hello. This is Stanley. I want to say hello to the other PAC members.
Hi, Stanley. This is Luna.
Hi, Luna. Hi, Luna. It's good to meet you via
yeah,
audio
as well.
Anyway.
Hey, Z.
Yeah, this is Z. I just want to know if my voice sounds as short as I really am.
You sound full-bodied, madam.
You sound very tall to me.
Yes. I love you.
Yeah, very tall. Very, very Bahati Prinsloo tall, you know.
Thank you.
So, yeah, and see, one of the things since you've said that I really love about this is that when I say Madame Perry's Salon, it was supposed to be a call back to cultural salons of the past, where there'd be a woman or somebody who's patroness of the arts who would bring different authors and musicians and artists into her home to share what they were working on, and that was the salon. And so this way I'm able to have
yes.
virtually, and so many people that that's one of the great things about things like Twitter or different types of social media, the internet, is that people like you guys came together. You met on Twitter. As I was telling Jeffrey earlier, I teach a group on DIY book publicity, and it's really more of a coaching group. And last night, we worked all on Twitter. We had a Twitter party, but I tried to explain to them, I have got clients on Twitter. I've gotten them booked into clubs, gotten free food delivered to the event, free publicity.
Oh, wow.
Just from people that I've met, I've gotten people on television shows just for things with people that I've met on Twitter.
Wow,
and
that's impressive.
As well as
when's your next class?
Say what?
Right. When's your next class?
Tuesday. So actually, that's a small group. So I'm doing these small coaching groups, and we go for a few weeks, and you can jump in any time and see how you like it and test it out. And because these are people that are writers of varying degrees of success, but we all bring something to support each other and teach. So, yeah, you guys should come. And everybody does.
That sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the deal. So, yes, I think that's a wonderful thing. You guys, some of you have never heard each other's voices, but you've met. Social media, and I'm thrilled that you're here, actually. In fact, Luna, do you know where I would have, if I could just transport you through a transporter right now, you know where I would take everyone here? Jeffrey and
I would love to know.
Huh?
Where would you take us?
And Stanley, I would take you all to Battery Park Book Exchange.
Oh, that's a great
place.
I love Battery Park and a bookstore. Yes.
Yeah, and I've booked a lot of clients' events there, especially in the Middle Earth Room, and because it's just so magic. And hey, you can bring dogs, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
My favorite places. So anyway, tell me all about your work. Who wants to read first?
Crickets.
You're up first.
When my band members used to get wild, I go, don't make JP have to spank spank. You know what? I think we're gonna do a part two of this tomorrow night. I got a feeling you guys have a lot more to tell than I can get into this 1 hour.
Oh boy, howdy!
You may have to come
back.
You may have to do two Wolfpack part two.
I'll
that
tell you
great.
What. I'll go ahead and read a part of my foreword that I did, and then I'm going to read part of Lauren Linder. Dr. Lindner is the owner of LARC, and you know it just gives a good description of her work with wolves and veterans. I'm gonna read those to you, and that should just kind of help out, and then Z can hop in, and then we can just go off from there. Sound good? All right. head in the clearing, an elk dips its head for a scarce mouthful of grass, still wet with early morning dew. The grasses no longer grow as they once did, and the elk are starving. There is a rustle in the distance. A wolf stalks low. The small male elk tenses his muscles, ready to bolt. From his flank, teeth tear through hide and muscle down to bone. The ensuing carnage feeds the pack, but that's only the start. Bears and hawks, big cats, and scavengers all have their fill. The other elk, the ones that got away, serve a crucial purpose, too. More specifically, their hooves. Thanks to the wolves, the elk run faster and farther. Their hooves aerate the ground, causing the grass to grow once more, firming vegetation along riverbanks, causing meandering rivers to straighten their paths. Death is an ugly thing, but beautiful too, sometimes even helpful. Writers often deal in death, or equally as disturbing materials. Words have the powers to destroy, but they can also change, heal, rally, or build. Words are a force unto themselves, often with favorable yet unforeseen and unintended consequences. Let us hope that words, as well as wolves, dangerous as they may appear, are understood as a force for good. And I'll skip over to Dr. Lindner's foreword. LARC, Lockwood Animal Rescue Center, is the permanent home to wolves and wolf dogs and also provides work therapy for veterans who care for these animals, both needing time to heal from their injuries they suffer at the hands of humans. Our purpose is to help wolves who have nowhere else to go but sanctuary, and to help veterans regain a sense of purpose by helping them be of service again to the animals. More veterans have died in recent years by committing suicide after returning from war than from actual combat, and the relationships they develop with wolves have proven to be therapeutic for both species. So, and that's all I've got for right now.
That's plenty. All right, and
wow, that was nice.
Yeah, very nice.
Well, thank you.
Which one of you worked for or first associated with Lockwood Animal Rescue?
That was me that found that charity, and it was one of those Facebook Jedi mind things. Like, I was thinking about it, and then it just popped up in my newsfeed. And I'm just like, I don't know how that happened, but that's exactly what I was thinking about. So I was looking for a charity associated with wolves and veterans, and like, I wasn't even looking. I was just thinking about it. And I think maybe we discussed it on Twitter. And bam, just popped up.
Synchronicity, Jeff.
I know, right?
Seriously. It's a powerful thing. Really is. So since we're moving ahead in time here, Luna, would you like to read next? Now, you don't have to.
I would love to. No, I would love to. I just have about 3 minutes prepared for my submission in the anthology. It's called True Nature. Is that too long, or is that okay?
All right.
Are we there?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. All righty. Thank you. So the name of the piece is True Nature, and I write urban fantasy. So if you're not into this, I apologize. So,
I thought it was
true nature. Thank you so much. You're wonderful. It's why you're who you are, Jeffrey. So,
all good.
With only three houses, Faye Street in Independence is quiet and secluded. Even so, with a vampire and a werewolf for neighbors, evenings can be less than relaxing. Not that either one would harm me, quite the opposite. The three of us enjoy a warm friendship. Not literally, plan being dead and all, but you know what I mean. We like spending time together. We are family by choice. And like a couple of big brothers, the boys love to tease me. Take tonight, for instance. Wolfgang and I were lounging on his not-quite-ratty sofa when Flan, thin, pale, and ginger-haired, suddenly appeared right in front of me. I managed not to shriek, but I gave a start that nearly sloshed the dewars out of my glass. Damn it, Flan! His wan lips curled into a satisfied smile. I am already quite damned, thank you. I glared at the vampire, then scowled at Wolf. Why don't you ever jump when he does that? Like his canine aspect, Wolfgang's human form is lean and long, his graying hair reflecting the color of his warfare.
He covered his sheepish look by savoring his whiskey for a moment. I smell him before I see him. Well, this is news to me. Oh, and here I was admiring your nerves as seal. Plan looked miffed. So, just what are you saying? His affronted tone made me laugh. I think he's saying you stink. It was Flan's turn to glower. I'm dead, not dirty. Wolf grinned and reached into the small cabinet that serves as his bar. It's not like that. He poured a stiff shot of whiskey into a glass, adding a bit to his own. He waved the bottle at me. Brighty? I'm good, thanks. Wolf handed the glass to Flan. It's not like smelling an odor. It's more like picking up on an energy signature. It's almost like smelling a vibration. I don't know how else to explain it. We tease him about being a night owl, but like Wolfgang, Flan's other form is a wolf. My pasty ginger friend complains that he would prefer to fly on bat's wings rather than run on all fours. I tell him I'd love to be a natural blonde, but like lack of equal pay for women, I live with the disappointment. Our host raised his glass. Prost. Flan and I raised our drinks. Slangeva. Good health, Flan mused. A little late for me, that. I gave him a confused look. Huh? How much healthier can you get than being immortal? Wolf gave a short laugh. Huh. You both have me beat. The best I can hope for is not counting my life in dog years. I sipped my drink and felt good fire flow down my throat. It's not always a good thing, living on and on. I could tell you stories. Flan nodded. Your own? I shook my head. Not yet. Family, though. Well, Wolf shrugged and looked at Flan. At least you don't have to worry about being poisoned or shot or drowned. Flan snorted. No, it's just the burning, decapitation, and stakes through the heart. Recent events considered, the discussion was making me uneasy. It's getting late, guys, I said to change the subject. Are we watching Rear Window tonight or not? Thank you.
That is great. That was Luna Salas reading from, do I pronounce your question correctly? Salas?
Yeah, Luna Salas, yes.
Okay. Reading from
Thank
story,
you.
True Nature from Once Upon a Wolf Pack. And that is so good. Urban fantasy with a good sense of humor.
I try. I'm known as a sarcastic person. Well, they use a different word, but you know.
We're all adults here. And we love this. Whatever else.
It rhymes with witch.
Also, if you want to, anyone listening or downloading the show that wants to, I'm sure this is okay for me to give to the public, their blog is wolfpackauthorstory.blogspot.com. And I'll be sharing that on all of my social media. So you can find that wolfpackauthorstory.blogspot.com and learn more about not just this book, but about all the authors involved in it and their other work. It's pretty rather impressive. All right. That brings me to somebody that I've been wanting to talk to and at least hear their voice in person in cyberspace for a long time. And you know who I'm talking about. I won't say their name, but their initials are Z. Gottlieb.
Me?
What?
Yes?
Are you going to do the whole thing in French for me? Because I'll be way behind. But
French? I got an issue here. Do you want me to read 500 words, or do you want me to just talk?
Well, it's up to you. If you want to talk about what you've written and how you wrote it, or if you would like to read, this is a place for you to share your work and your voice, if you wish.
Okay. Well, Wolf cried. Brad felt his body sink into the shaking earth. He moaned from a sharp pain in his side. Suddenly, someone grabbed him and pulled him away. Brad, wake up. Wake up. You're dreaming. Brad opened to his eyes to Shinny shaking him. He pushed her away and looked into his eye, the disheveled, looked into his disheveled wife's worried eyes. I'm up. What's wrong? You were having a bad dream. Are you well? The pain subsided as Brad rubbed the left side of his torso. I'm fine. The dream was a bit too real. What did you dream? I dreamt I was the alpha of a wolf pack. We were being hunted across a plateau that ended in sheer cliff. The pack was depending upon me, but the hunters injured me. I felt I was in over my head and couldn't escape. Brad paused for a moment. We were going to die. Why in the universe would you suddenly dream of wolves? Brad choked down an urge to laugh. He wasn't sure what was unusual at this point, since he found out the love of his life was an alien. It was strange. I'm not sure it meant anything. Did you recognize the cliff? No. I have no idea if it's on Earth or another planet. It's Earth. Wolves are indigenous to Earth only. Shinny leaned over to look at the clock on Brad's nightstand. Do you want to stay home today? No. I promised Connor I would pick up his projects while he was out of the office. I also have my own software projects I need to complete before he gets back to the office tomorrow. Brad looked at the clock. We might as well get up. That isn't what I meant. Connor wouldn't expect you to be in the office if you thought there was a problem. I know what you meant. I'm fine. Do you think your dream was a warning about anything? Suggested Shinny. Brad threw off the covers in exasperation and stood up. No. I told you what I know. If I thought there was a reason for concern, I would have shared it with you. I'm just trying to understand. You're not the only one. As far as I can tell, my so-called precognition is useless, especially when the dreams are as nonsensical as this. Shinny stood up and brushed her dark blonde shoulder-length hair away from her face. She walked over to Brad and kissed him on the cheek. I'm sorry. I did not mean to upset you. I'll go make the coffee. Thanks. Brad returned the kiss and headed off to the shower. Brad was on edge throughout the whole day, but couldn't put his finger on why. Feeling unsettled, he sat down on the moist ground near the 12th hole. Over the years, he used the neighborhood golf course as his retreat when he needed to think about something. He stared towards the star-filled sky. There was definitely something that was causing him to feel uncomfortable. And I guess people will have to buy the book to find out what it was making him feel uncomfortable. That's it for me.
That's keeping him on the edge. Thank you so very much. They got me.
I'm sorry?
I said, I'm sorry, did I say thank you?
Well, yeah, thank you for having me on the show.
No, I thought you said you were going to keep us on. They'd have to read the rest of the story to find out how it ends.
Well, yes. I mean, you are supporting the wolves and the veterans. All the proceeds will go towards Lark.
Yeah, so that's what I was saying. So that was Dee Gottlieb reading from her story, Wolf Cry, from the anthology Once Upon a Wolf Pack. And, of course, proceeds go to Hell Lockwood Animal Rescue. So much. Don't go away. I don't want anybody to go away. You guys are a cozy bunch. I don't know, maybe it's just me, but as it gets a little later, I feel like you guys are getting a little furrier, but that's okay. That's okay. I'm perfectly happy with that. So, Z, how long have you been writing?
You know, I did it when I was younger in school and then stopped. And about 4 years ago, I just decided I was going to write a book. So, I'm probably about as old as Georgia O'Keeffe when she decided she wanted to paint. So this might be my third career.
Okay, I like that. Anyway, I like that philosophy a lot, the attitude. What about, I didn't ask you, Luna, how long have you been writing?
Oh, gosh. I think the first thing that I wrote was in middle school, and it was actually a little story for a – we used to have announcements on the intercom. I'm that old. So we would have – students once in a while would be able to write little series of works, and my character was a mild-mannered Mellard Milksop. And he was a kind of long before Urkel was ever thought of. He was kind of an Urkel-type person, and I got to do a little snippet of his life in school each week for announcements. So that was my first foray. And then I didn't do a lot for a long time after that, and I'm kind of followed Z's pattern, and I went back and picked it up again, you know, years later. But it's satisfying. It's just, you know, it's just as one of those things where it's satisfying and frightening at the same time. But kind of, I guess, kind of any profession is that.
Definitely want to get in while we're here another of the excellent contributors to Once Upon a Wolf Pack, and that is Stanley Brown. Stanley? How are you doing?
Hi. Well, I have to confess something. I don't really have a short story in this anthology. What I did was I contributed to it as an editor. So if you don't mind, and I was invited to the program today, I'd like to read something from one of my published novels. This one comes from, it's published last April of 2018. Is that okay?
Of course it is.
Okay. Well, let me give you a little background. This is the first of my trilogy. The trilogy is called The Stonehenge Chronicles, and this novel is the first. It's called Veiled Memory, and it's a sci-fi fantasy contemporary, meaning that it takes place in this world, in our time. And just to tell you a little bit about the trilogy, by the time I'm finished with the trilogy, you will know exactly how Stonehenge came to be and why it came to be. And I've just submitted the second of the trilogy to my publisher, and it will be published right before Thanksgiving this year. But I'm going to read part of chapter one. I like writing prologue, but I'll just start with chapter one. And my protagonist is a professor of Celtic history at Cornell University. So the first scene, chapter one, takes place there. So let me start reading with that, a little bit of background. Madeline Allen stood at the tall filing cabinet, staring out the window that gave her a spectacular view of Ithaca, New York's business district. A frozen haze lay over the valley at the southern tip of Cayuga Lake, nearly obliterating the small town. She had run up the stairs to her office in record time, anticipating her coming visitor. In minutes, half the contents of the middle drawer lay scattered on the floor, but she hadn't found what she needed. The papers in these drawers were essential to her ongoing research, but she hadn't bothered with the other files since her days at Columbia University 19 years earlier. Most of the material chronicled her education in linguistics and archaic languages. Life had taken many twists since those carefree days: marriage, full-time work, another graduate degree, a desperate flight to protect the lives of her unborn triplet daughters. She withdrew two more folders, examined the articles in them, and dropped them to the floor. They slid a little on the slick towel, the contents of the folders spilling out. With both hands buried in the drawer, she turned and checked the wall clock. 8:30. He would be there any minute. Gordon Toop had called last night. The subject of the call had been on her mind of late, but that it could also be on his mind done to her. By the end of the conversation, the reason for his call still eluded her. He had prodded her most sensitive nerve, alluding to things he shouldn't have known. The question of how much he knew had kept her up all night. The topic worried her like no other. She removed a folder titled Runic Symbols. It contained articles on the rune alphabet common to early Britain, circa 2nd century A.D., She'd authored most of them, but found two her coming visitor had written. She set one aside and began leafing through the other. But before she could make any headway, she heard a distinctive thump, thump, thump. It grew louder, making its way up the corridor. She turned towards the closed office door. Madeline knew him by reputation through a scholarly interest they shared. She owned all of his books and most of his other research papers. She had never met him, but she knew he was old, nearing 80, but still working at Northeastern University in Boston. His call had been unexpected, his offer even more so, an invitation to speak at a conference. She already knew about the venue, Manhattan, and had to respectfully decline. Her reason was personal, as it always was with talk of the city. Before she knew it, she had talked. He had talked her into this meeting, said he was in Ithaca anyway on other business. She felt uneasy, almost trapped. Her antenna had gone up and had remained. Why the meeting today? That question dominated her thinking through the long, cold night. She saw her children off to school and made it to her campus office in record time, despite the icy streets. Maybe his English accent and kind voice opened the door of her usual caution. His invitation flattered her, but slipping back into her more natural, suspicious nature on the drive over, she could see the subtle manipulation. She had phoned him from the car to cancel. Too late. She couldn't reach him. Several hard raps on the door startled her. She fussed over the flower vase and in two quick steps reached the door. Gordon Toop was the picture-perfect academic in his tweed jacket, a smoking pipe stuck between his teeth. He entered the room, taking the first step with his artificial left leg, tobacco smoke billowing in after him. Madeline took his arm and led him in. Before sitting, he removed his heavy overcoat and flung it over the back of the chair. He then folded into the seat with a groan, his false leg extended out in front at an odd angle. Thank you so much, madam, for helping an old warrior like me, Toop said in a rasping voice. He held up his pipe. Do you mind? Go right ahead. His eyes strayed to the clutter on the floor. I must say, I like to see well-worked offices. Sorry about the mess. It's not usually like this. A sign of a productive mind. Madeline couldn't help staring at his prosthesis protruding from the end of his trouser. I should have explained Cynthia here, he said, grinning, patting it. It does make a rather distinctive sound. Korean War. Named it after my second wife who died 5 years ago. I got a new leg to commemorate her. The first one I named Harriet after my first wife. She died in a plane crash, transporting some of the wounded boys after the hostilities ended. She was a physiotherapist working with the injured. With difficulty, he held his leg a few inches off the floor. Met her getting the first one of these. Suspect I won't need another. Madeline chuckled, some of her tension draining away. Anyway, we haven't properly met. Gordon Toop at your service, but Gordon will do for a colleague as esteemed as yourself. Thank you, she said, extending her right hand while rolling her chair toward him. I'm Madeline. His massive hand swallowed hers. Your call last night was unexpected. Sorry I had to. Say no more, Dr. Allen. It's quite all right. Been turned down before. I wanted you to know that my decision wasn't an easy one. She grimaced with a lie. I have triplet daughters, and their birthday is this week, so I'm afraid I... All is forgiven, madam. Then why am I here, he said, interrupting again. To give it another try, of course. Madeline started at this, but opened her mouth to say something. Please hear me out. I have some information I think just might turn that lovely head of yours enough to change your mind. Leery now, Madeline said. I'm listening. I've been made privy to some information, an old discovery. Runestones, my dear, Middle Eastern runestones. Madeline blinked at this as if she hadn't heard properly. Excuse me, what did you say? He leaned forward and removed his pipe from between his teeth. I'm here to speak with you about an old discovery the Natural History Museum in Manhattan was once thought to house. She sat back into her seat, heart pounding, two bushy eyebrows elevated. My dear, are you all right? She regained enough composure to say, why should that be important to me? I mean, besides the obvious anomaly of runestones found in that part of the world, do you have a date? We don't have the stones, he said, leaning forward in the chair again, examining her even more closely. No one knows how many there were, what they looked like, or anything about them. We don't know where they are now, but good people believe in their existence, and rumor has it they are 5,000 years old. Oh, yes, I almost forgot another rumor. It seems that the glyph Thurzaz is mentioned prominently on them. Madeline closed her eyes reflexively. She knew the stones existed. Of course they did. And she knew their age. These were some of her most closely guarded secrets now being talked about openly. It was like this man had taken a lamp and illumined the dark crevices of her mind. No one could possibly know these things, not even the great Gordon Toop. Well, it goes on from there, and that's the first part of the first chapter of Veiled Memory. And thanks for allowing me to read that.
I would hope everyone in the Wolfpack authors feels comfortable in Madame Perry's salon to read from her work, because it's an honor for me, definitely. So for those listening, and also say hello to some listeners out there that are messaging me, Kristen and Connie, thank you all so much for listening. They are liking the work. How can you get the book? I am sharing right now on Twitter the link to buy Once Upon a Wolfpack on Amazon. Is it published yet, or is it? Because I saw that it's a pre-order $2.99 on Kindle right now, a special.
It's available on the 19th.
Okay. So yes, I'm sharing the information on how to follow the blog, also how to learn more about on how to. Well, actually, just as I'm just fascinated by Lockwood Animal Rescue Center, and I've also shared. I just shared a link on Twitter, and I'm about to, and also on Facebook, a particular page called Wolves and Warriors, and it describes the similarities between a veteran and a wolf. And I would read it to you, but I think I'm going to let you read it yourself because it's a very powerful. It's a short read, but it's a strong read. It's very powerful, and I've. I wanted to say we have someone else who's just come in here, Z, or if you don't mind letting someone else in for me that's been here for a while. Welcome to Madame Perry Salon. I know you've been on hold for a while, so thank you for waiting and being so patient. And who do we have here? It's someone from the land of area code 571.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Z. My phone, my home phone just kind of died, so I called back on my cell.
Oh, yay. Okay. All right.
Well, do you have any questions for the group, Z?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Do I have? Jen, did Jeff share with you that we often refer to him as our alpha?
No, but
that's just being silly. Now, technically, on the nonprofit side of things, I'm referred to as the president. So, you know, there's that, and that is an official title. On the you know, formation documents, but you know, whatever, you can just call me Jeff, it's fine.
Can we call you Boss? Come on.
yeah, there's that. If it's all right, if I could share some of my actual work that I put in that's not the foreword, can we do that?
Well, yes, because I know that you said this is Jeffrey, right? Because, Jeff, you've got...
Yes,
I don't see how you put this together when you just released a new novel on February 17th. Barely 2 months
ago. Oh, I'm on it, doggone it. Yeah, we're good. I stay busy, I'll tell you what. I'm down in Detroit right now. I own a technical writing, editing, marketing, writing company. So I'm like, I don't know. I'm just a busy guy all around. So
I'll say, but DeMarco Writing and Editing. I see as your business and the website for DeMarco Writing and Editing is on the Wolfpack.
It's DeMarcoWriter.com. The anthology isn't about me, but I did write part of my story, and it's a prologue from to book two, Born of Chaos, of the Ruler of Ashes series, and it's not in that book. This is just kind of something on the side to go parallel with that story. So are you ready? We ready for it?
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna kind of jump around here because that's what I do because I'm high strung. But I'll let you know when I'm jumping around. All right, and the title is Sasha, one of my characters in the series. Voices carried on the frigid wind, howling through the pine forest. Sasha could hear their murmurs, their boots crunching through the snowpack, the metal rifles carried at the ready, clicking against belts and brass overcoat buttons. She did not want to kill them. She would try not to. They were neither guilty nor innocent, only soldiers of an ideal long since dead. The Russian government had violated its mandate to serve the people, a false flag of nationalism, an ideal now perverted, used up and cast aside as nothing more than a facade. Russia was not alone. All major governments had done so, from Britain and France, the U.S. and China. They all vied for power in a global arena. The politicians, military generals, religious leaders, they were guilty. "He's killed so many," Sasha whispered. "We have to kill him." She raised the standard of the people, carried it with her. To fight those that were guilty, she would make them fight themselves. Inside the minds of these fallen leaders, the truth of absolute power was visible. They had been hand-selected by her and her brothers and sisters, those beings like her, something beyond human. The hope of a better tomorrow withered. These men and women, these righteous leaders, succumbed to the trappings of greed and power. Corruption. Humanity. At times, Sasha was ashamed she shared a part of her genetic code with them. Her rifle lay ready to correct the mistakes of her past, her body buried in snow, green eyes fixed on the target. The roving patrol of soldiers turned south towards a howl of another kind, followed by the soundless rhythm of paws moving stealthily along the frozen forest floor. Perhaps today soldiers would die at the will of wolves, or vice versa. The radio squelched, Pavel's voice on the other side. "Negative, wait for confirmation." From Sasha's position deep in the frigid Siberian wilderness, she was inside her target's mind now, looking through his eyes as he read official email correspondence inside a palatial estate whilst thick billows of steam wafted up above the rim of his teacup. At any moment, she could burst a blood vessel in his brain or cause a massive heart attack. But no, even her thoughts had a mocking tone to them. "I've got to wait for confirmation." Now I'm going to jump over, a few paragraphs. It's just a part I like. She lifted her head centimeters from her scope. The sunset shone wide across the horizon, dipping down in hues of crimson over platinum-crested treetops. Overcome, she pictured that she was no longer buried in snow, a sniper rifle trained on another human life. She wished this was not her lot. She could be a wolf, alone, free, and hunted. She remembered a hammer does not question why it's a hammer, nor does a wrench question why it's a wrench. Her mind acted as intermediary. Botchkov scrolling through a list of genetically altered humans living freely in the United States. She filled Pavel's mind as though he were sitting beside her, though he was miles away within a sealed bunker, writing down details, imprinting faces to memory. A low guttural growl broke the quiet in the distance, the wolves taunting their prey. As yet, no shots had been fired, no teeth sunk in the flesh. "Check the two-line," Pavel said. Silence, her mind drifted. The email. There was a mild concern in his voice. "Sasha?" "Oh, right," she shook her head, pulling herself from the trance. Her mind shifted back to the target, assuming control of Botchkov's mind on the mouse. She clicked, an instant treasure trove of intelligence, names of top operatives within the order. Happy now, can I kill him? Wow, Pavel said, delighted at the discovery. See what else you could find. Her teeth gritted in frustration. Wait, she whispered, her mind drawn back to the pack. The soldiers were now surrounded on all three sides, the fourth side an opening towards Sasha's position. A foreign voice hissed in her mind. What are you going to do? She clicked transmit on her radio. Pavel? The receiver transmitted back only static. His volume rose to the point of pain, and she tore it from her head. The voice whispered once more. What is your wish, Sasha? And that's where I'll leave you.
Ooh. Huh. You're mean, Jeff.
I know. You too.
Jeff, you're a tease. You're just a tease, that's all.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Go buy the book.
Yeah. Do you have any plans to make Once Upon a Wolf Pack an audio book or...
You know, I am actually set it, not that I've, like, gone so far, you know, it's a pretty big book. You're getting a really good value for $15.99 for the paperback. I mean, I'm holding the proof here, and it's like Bible-sized. But that being said, I am actually setting up a recording studio in my basement. So I'm going to try my hand at recording my own audio book, and my brother actually has a better speaking voice than I do, so he's actually offered to do the narration if mine sounds terrible.
Well, you know, because so many people, as I was telling the group that I coach about talking about audio books, is that now I'm on the road a lot, and so I like to have audio books to keep me company, and I know which truck stops have the best audiobooks, that they have a lot of David Balcony or things like that, or John Le Carré that I like to read or listen to. And it's comfortable to have that to read, because even XM radio gets old after a while. So, and Writer's Magazine says, you know, audio is the way to go. So I think this is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I am so grateful to have Jeffrey DeMarco, Z. Gottlieb, Luna Saylor, the Wolfpack Authors Group, and the book is called Once Upon a Wolfpack. You can pre-order it from Amazon. I've already pre-ordered mine, and I am sharing it everywhere, and I'm going to put it up on Instagram later tonight, but I'll let everybody know on all of my social media, probably for the rest of the week. Maybe next week I'll keep letting you know where to find it, and if you have any questions, let me know. This is a fantastic group, and I'm also sharing their website to the blogger, the Blogspot page for Wolfpack Authors Stories, as well as LockwoodARC.org, Animal Rescue Center, a magnificent group, and Rescue Center there. And so that's a great page. I thank you all so very much for being so generous with your time tonight, and for your stories and what you're doing for Lockwood Animal Rescue Center and for our veterans. And if I would love to have you back for a part two anytime. You tell me, and we will all be here.
I will shoot you an email here sometime towards the end of this week, and we can discuss that very topic.
Okay, terrific. And I think you're all great. I wish you all much success and everything with Once Upon a Wolf Pack and with everything else that you're doing with your work. You're quite a fascinating group of authors. And so just remember, while you're working, you're doing good work, you're doing good writing to entertain people, but you're always also doing good things for the veterans and for the wolves. And
goodbye to you guys. Mother